Hello and welcome to the Majlis Ready for Your Pre-Deliberties Current Affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis podcast and Ready for Your Pre-Deliberties media manager here in Washington, D.C. Political activities are heating up lately in Kazakhstan ahead of the upcoming parliamentary elections, which is planned for July 10th. This would be the first major election under President Tokayev, with various elections taking place in recent months in the neighborhood, and a couple of them are coming up in the next months. It's been quite an election year in the region. So how Kazakhstan is preparing for the elections, what the authorities are doing, what they are saying, how the opposition is getting ready for the big day. The bottom line is what the political atmosphere tells us or looks like in the biggest nation of Central Asia ahead of this crucial political development. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Shalker Nursaitov, Almaty-based political analyst, Aygul Jamal, an independent journalist based in Nur-Sultan, Mukhtar Sengirbay, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Liberty's Kazakh service, Radio Azatik, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today on this important conversation. I guess we will start with the recent demonstration in Almaty, and Shalker, you are joining us from Almaty. So tell us about how was the demonstration and what they were demanding.
So it's a first sanction rally in Almaty that took place last Saturday.
Right.
In my view, the regime sanctioned the protest because of two main reasons. First, since last year, Tokayev and his administration has attempted to portray and sort National Council on Public Trust and the activities as essential steps leading to political reforms. In fact, they were cosmetic changes to laws on peaceful assembly, on the law on elections and political parties. The second, on the eve of elections, sanctions rallies are a good opportunity for the regime to evaluate the level of discontents and dissatisfactions of the politically active citizens who might take to the streets in January 2021.
Right. This is the policy thinking. But is it easy to organize a demonstration in Kazakhstan these days? Because authorities promised that they will back off in terms of people expressing their opinion. So is it easier to organize rallies like this?
Unfortunately, it has become harder to organize protests in Kazakhstan. Mm-hmm. Despite all ongoing conversations led by Tokayev in his administration, they're basically saying that Kazakhstan is taking a path of political reforms. Mainly, when it comes to political rallies, they usually mention about some cosmetic changes they made to the law on peaceful assembly. As many experts and human rights activists usually mention, the main argument is that the new law actually made it much harder to organize protests because you have to organize this process in consultation with local authorities, and also
what does consultation mean, Shalker?
Let's take the last rally, which took place last Saturday. The well-known human rights activist Vakhchan Turagojina and Gala Maglouf, actually they applied twice before getting the permission for the third time, and they actually posted many times on Facebook that they had, I guess, several meetings with local authorities on the rally. They discussed their topics and also they signed the papers. And so they actually become responsible people for the safety of protesters.
Mm. And basically, safety in terms of
they're
like
putting more responsibility.
Yeah, and what I was trying to say is, like, when you say safety, these are not usual days in the world organizing anything crowded and because of the pandemic.
By safety, I mean not only safety from coronavirus, but also physical safety of protesters. As you know, there was an incident in that rally in which an unknown man punched another man who was dressed as a woman in the face. As a result, on social media, instead of discussing protests, people discussed that incident and the protesters. Mm-hmm. In fact, those people were portrayed on social media as protesters who went on that rally. Mm-hmm. So it's my personal view, and I have no documents and other facts to prove my point. But it seems to me that the authorities tried to use these protests to discredit protesters by organizing such kind of incident. there was some critical post on Facebook that mentioned that one of the participants of the incident previously was involved in Rotan's activities.
I'm not sure if I got your point there. I mean,
so the guy who got punched in his face is previously worked as a trainer for Rotan members. He prepared Rotan members for public speaking. And there was some investigation by political activists, and they posted their investigation on Facebook by saying that the guy who got punched and also who was dressed as a woman basically was involved in some activities organized by Norton Party.
So let's see. I mean, we don't have anyone joining us from Norton Party today, nor from the organizers of this rally. That's why I'm hesitant to go into details of those, how it happened, why it happened, and type of the incident you are referring to. But coming back to the demonstrations, let me bring you in here, the latest one. I mean, what they were demanding, my first question. The second thing, was it the only protest have taken place in recent days?
Thank you, Mohammed. So as far as I'm concerned, this rally was like by plans, according to plans, it shouldn't be not the only one, because on the social media pages of Bakhtchan Turigozhina, who is, as Shalkar mentioned, human rights activist and one of the initiators of this rally, so she posted on her social media page a lot of information from her so-called colleagues from regions of Kazakhstan that also wanted, you know, to apply and get a permission to held a rally in regions of Kazakhstan. However, I've seen that they received like 3-4 times a lot of rejections. So yeah, this probably means that to some extent, maybe government wanted to approve the last rally just to analyze the reaction of people and for other reasons as well. And if we are talking about the demands, so the main topic of last rally was just two reasons. It's again to highlight the importance of political reforms. This is first. And the second is just to show that they are against political repression. And basically, Bakhtchan Turigozhin and Galim Agilev, they read from the stage the names of those who, according to their opinion, were subjected to political persecution and should be immediately released. Also, you know, if you go to internet and see pictures from that day, you can see a lot of names of that people who, according to protesters, should be released as soon as possible. It's Arona Tabekov and a lot of other names.
Okay, so beyond this group, were there any other political activities taking place, like demonstration protests in regard to election organized by other groups, parties or groups or activists?
Well, unfortunately, you know, there is very limited number of mass media outlets or open sources where you can get this information in Kazakhstan. And I could even say that, for example, about last protests, political protests, even we who are like residents of capital, you know, city, not Almaty, even we don't know a lot of information about what was going on there in Almaty. So this is why maybe, you know, maybe we had such activities, but maybe we just don't know about it, because I haven't seen any other additional information. And also, I want to mention one small interesting point, that in the capital, we have, like, we can't use public transport each weekend, specifically on each Sundays. And for sure, the main official reason for that is like disinfection and the pandemic of coronavirus. But some people, it's just opinion of some people, that it is also made just to put people at homes, you know, just to, when they have a lot of free time, just not to allow them to go maybe express their political views, etc.
So let me bring in Mukhtar. Mukhtar, so what I'm trying to understand here is we have spoken about the rally that took place over the weekend. So what's the scope and size of this content? There is clearly anger, or there is a disappointment, or there is a desire by the people to organize rallies and express their opinion in public. So what's the size and scope of these activities ahead of the election in Kazakhstan? Other than Almaty, is there anything taking place outside in the regions, elsewhere? And who involved in those activities?
First, I would like to add something to what Shalkar said about this law. The law has been changed in order to portray the more democratic president. But at the same time, and there was a term that it was presented that the after this law, the people won't be obliged to ask for the government to give them permission to have these rallies. But in reality, we see that we still call them as sanctioned and unsanctioned meetings. So in reality, as I said, it's the same, even harder, because from our reports from different regions of Kazakhstan, from northern Kazakhstan, from western, from thousand, they have been applying for having these kind of meetings, protests everywhere, having been rejected for different reasons. Mostly it's because of the coronavirus. Uh-huh. But sometimes they say that the topic is different, so the topic is irrelevant. So lots of different reasons for rejecting. In terms of scope, it's a very interesting question. We can't guess the scope, but from the scope of the reaction to the resignation of the President Nazarbayev and the what has been happening after that, the elections, the reaction to the elections, the support of the oppositional candidate Kosanov, we see that there is a huge demand, people demanding something, demanding change. I can say that this is a... If we look at this like from the generational perspective, this is the young generation who grew up, who was born in the independent Kazakhstan and who didn't experience these previous repressions, previous political turmoils, which had happened with the institutionalized opposition who disappeared. They don't exist now. But we have a young generation who want this, and they have different backgrounds. They have different values, different ideologies, and they are everywhere. So it's a huge mass of young people, mostly young people, who want something different, who are globalized, and who see what's happening in neighboring countries, what's happening in Belarus, in Kyrgyzstan, and they are not agreeing with the status quo, and they want to change it anyway. But they are not organized, they don't have any leaders,
used to have a platform.
In their agenda.
Mukhtar, I remember they used to have a platform like Oyan Kazakhstan and one NGO called Kahraman. Where are they? They had a platform.
It was like... a reaction to post-election period. They were emotional. They were organized for this election to have it more or less civilized way. But they saw the results. They were very disappointed. They were disappointed by the, let's say, old generation politicians. And they started to do something. They wanted to create a party. I remember it was Respublika, and there was Oyan Kazakhstan. It was just an impulse. It was like one-time reaction. Now, they don't have leaders. They don't have experience. Most of them are young, like younger than 30 or in 20s. Or maybe some of them are just students of the universities. And they are now mostly concerned about the free and fair elections. They are mostly doing the activities in terms of observing the elections, etc. This kind of rallies, but nothing more, because they don't have a vision, they don't have a leader, they are not organized.
Right, interesting.
In terms of having institutionalized political organization.
Great. Let me also bring in Bruce. I mean, Bruce is unusually quiet today. Bruce, jump in, please. Yeah, we have a lot to talk here. So I guess the latest demonstration was, at least this is what I read somewhere, was organized by the Democratic Party, right? The leader of that party is, I guess, Mr. Mamai?
Yeah, that was he was one of the people that called for it, for sure. I mean, there was a lot of activists that were out there and different people from other groups that did, like, you know, the Koshe Partiasi, you know, also, although they didn't advertise that because they're banned. But yeah, I think he was the one that first brought it up. But I mean, most of the stuff I read started with activists, you know, well-known activists, like getting this thing all together. And it was kind of their rally. I mean, I agree with what the speakers have said. you know, that in fact, you know, the authorities, although they've said that they're loosening up restrictions on demonstrations, that, you know, and I remember the part where they said that you weren't going to have to ask for permission, but then all of a sudden you did have to ask for permission. There's a limit on how many people can be there. There's also restrictions on where you can hold. Every city is supposed to have, depending on how big it is, you know, one site at least, possibly. I think Almaty has two that are actually like approved sites for holding a rally. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's all these other rules that they put on there. And, you know, and as we've heard, people and other going into Saturday's protests or demonstrations, excuse me, rallies, you know, a lot of people in other cities were applying to try to hold their own rallies too. And they got turned down. And I mean, they tried several times. And as we heard too, I mean, all the people that finally got the chance to organize it in Almaty, that was on the third attempt that they finally got permission. But you're not even supposed to have permission. At least according to what they said at first. So it's I don't see almost any difference in the rules now compared to what they were when Nazarbayev was in. You could also, in theory, you could have gotten permission and been able to hold a rally. You know, in fact, no one ever did get permission. And it's hard, like I said, it's hard to see that it's really different at the moment.
Yeah, it's just one question, though, like, you know, this is coming from the comments made by our other speakers, too. I mean, it looks like, you know, people are mobilized, they are fired up, they are frustrated, they have things to say, and then authorities are creating restrictions. Just wondered, how do you see the future, like how it's going to evolve going forward? We have 2 months to go until the elections.
In some ways, the genie's out of the bottle. People have already, even without permission, we've seen how many protests, you know, or demonstrations since, you know, March 2019. Undoubtedly, there's going to be more. You know, so whether they get permission or not, you know, now, you know, the part of the thing is, of course, the image the government has, certainly Nazarbayev has, is this, you know, civilized country at the heart of the Eurasian crossroad and all that kind of stuff. So they don't want to ruin their image by having, you know, footage like they did, you know, when Tokayev was arrested, people being dragged into vans, you know, thrown in there, beaten, you know, on the street and stuff. It makes them look bad. It'll be interesting to see how they're going to balance that because, you know, they, again, people, more of the international community will be paying attention to what happens. You can't really crack down on protesters like we've seen in Minsk, right? They don't want to be the next Belarus and Lukashenko. That's a bad image for Kazakhstan. But also they don't like the protests, but they're still going to have to let them go. Mm. At least some, you know, and we'll just have to see. But like I said, there's no way what's happened in the last 18 months can be erased. Mm. From Kazakhstan, 18 or 19 months since Nazarbayev stepped down. I mean, as we heard, the younger generation wants, something's got to change. Mm. Can't just keep the same rules and say we have new leadership and they're going to be more, a little bit more liberal, more accessible to the public, listen to what the public wants more, and then they don't do anything. That's no good. Mm.
You know, I also want to bring back, before I take break here, Shalkar, I mean, the type of activities taking place these days, political activities, and just, I don't have anything to compare that in Kazakhstan, but how do you see, as a political analyst, what is causing this and what the future holds for these kind of activities? And also, I can't disattach the regional developments from what's taking place in Kazakhstan. Do you see the developments in Kyrgyzstan or Belarus perhaps might be inspiring some of these people coming out to take the street and express their opinions?
Sure, there are some common patterns in political developments in Central Asia, but also there are distinct differences in those countries. In particular, in Kazakhstan, I would say that representatives of Nazarbayev's regime are really bad in policy making, but they are good enough in playing politics. Over the past three decades...
You are still saying Nazarbayev regime. You mean Tokayev, right?
No, I mean Nazarbayev's regime, because Nazarbayev still controls all branches of the power. So over the past three decades, we've seen that they have been using tailored tactics against opposition groups and political activists. They use different tools, different means against their opponents. They have monopolized the political scene by flagrantly violating fundamental political freedoms of citizens. And also, they have stifled the media. They cracked down on protesters. And also, they have updated that playbook over the past couple of years. I mean, they actually have tried to use some elements of electoral democracy. Let's take the last year's presidential election. We saw so-called opposition politician who took officially 16% of the vote. So what I'm trying to say is that we might see in the future, for sure, more political rallies before the parliamentary elections and after. But in my view, we'll not have some developments that have been taking place in Kyrgyzstan and Belarus, because mm-hmm. Kazakhstan is different not only in terms of political development, also in terms of economy, in terms of social and cultural developments.
And also, maybe Aygül, you would like to jump in here. And yes, election looks like kind of an obvious development that's going to take place in 2 months in Kazakhstan. But other than that, what is it that's causing these? Is there any common cause between all the groups who are trying to mobilize their supporters?
Well, if I'm talking about my personal view, so I kind of agree with your question, you know, with your suggestions, that I think that that wave might be inspired by the situation that is going on in Central Asia now. And especially, you know, because the situation of expressing their opinion openly in Kyrgyzstan, for example, is not new for this country. And every time when Kazakh citizens hear about the situation in Kyrgyzstan, they always feel like it's a like negative sign for Kazakhstan citizens, like we are not able to express ourselves openly, or maybe that we are just feared to do that, etc., etc. So from this term, I might assume that, for example, some regions of Kazakhstan, as maybe west part and maybe Almaty, they might be actually inspired by the situation. And also, if we are talking about Belarus, we also know that official media are still silent, but they have open social media pages, as Telegram channel, very popular, that's called Nexta or Nekta. So, and I know that a lot of Kazakhstan citizens also, you know, follows all that social media pages. So that might be affect them too.
Okay. I have to take a break here, but just a very quick point, Mukhtar, if you can talk about this very, very briefly. During the summer times, when lots of young people were taking the streets and they were coming up with lots of creative ideas how to protest, are you seeing any creativity during these days when the opposition take the street? And
yes, as I said, they don't have any experience of expressing in a way that the old generation did, but they are young.
Mukhtar, I usually don't disagree with my speakers, but here I just want to say, like during the summer protests, the youth-led protests, they were very creative, the way they expressed their opinion, their frustration.
They were creative, and they will go, I think they will continue in this way.
And are you seeing any such creativity?
It's not visible every day, but they do it from time to time. It depends on the topic. It depends on the day. I think where we are approaching the elections and we see how people are being active in politics, and there will be creativity this way.
Okay, so let's talk about the elections. So what are the parties which will be on the ballot? And I think we saw authorities announce their decision about the political parties which will be competing in the election. So what kind of parties were they, what they stand for, and also how the authorities are preparing for the election day? And also what's in store going forward ahead of the election? Let's continue the conversation talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast. I am joined by Shalkar Nursaidov, Almaty-based political analyst, Aygül Jamal, an independent journalist based in Nur Sultan, Mukhtar Singerbay, the editor of Radio Free Europe, the Liberties Kazakh Service Radio Azatik, Ruspanir, the editor of Radio Free Europe, the Liberties Central Asia Blog, Kishlok Awazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, the Liberties media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the political situation in Kazakhstan ahead of crucial parliamentary elections. So, Bruce, let me start with you. Before we got to the studio, we were talking about the parties which were registered by the authorities to participate in the election. So which kind of parties are they? And where they stand in terms of the issues, the type of issues which we heard in the rallies that have taken place lately?
None of the parties that were registered to participate in the elections or had anything to do with these rallies, as far as I know. I mean, Nur-Otan, obviously not. The ruling party, Akçol, IU, Birlik, you know, these are all parties that have been aligned with government policies for a long time. You know, and then the two that are supposed to nominally, or some people suggest, are like kind of an opposition parties, the Communist People's Party of Kazakhstan, and the best translation would be like Nationwide or something, Social Democratic Party. These were created to fake people out years ago when there was actually a Communist Party of Kazakhstan and a Social Democratic Party. These two parties that I mentioned first were created to confuse people about they had almost identical names to parties that had already existed. So they're really all pro-presidential parties. Nur-Otan, of course, was formed specifically at the time that the chairman of Nur-Otan years ago was Sergei Tereshenko. He had been prime minister under Nazarbayev too, and he was the chairman of the party when it was first founded. And he said on that day that this party is being created to keep re-electing Nazarbayev. Well, they can't do that anymore. But that gives you a hint about who we're talking about here. Nazarbayev is, I mean, still pretty much in charge. He's not president. Nur-Otan can't exist to keep him as president, but certainly they exist to keep him in power. And obviously they'll do quite well in parliamentary elections. You know, there's only three parties that have seats in parliament now. So I suppose when you have six, you know, this is another one of those things that probably looks good on paper to people who aren't paying attention, but, you know, probably now four or five, who knows, might actually get seats. It doesn't matter. You know, Nur-Otan will still have the majority, maybe not the huge majority that it has now, but enough to pass legislation without any problem. In any case, none of the other parties that get in will do anything but agree with whatever Nur-Otan proposes. So
I guess the criteria for registering and not registering some parties are clearly where they stand in terms of their support for the government looks like. But so what are the parties which won't be on the ballot? Which are they? Any idea?
Choice of Kazakhstan won't be on.
That's the party we were. Mamai was on our show like a couple of months ago, Bruce. Right?
Yeah, you know, that's Vlasov's party. Actually, that's a really, really old party. It just hasn't been registered in a while. That party is like 18 years old. But like I said, they're banned. You know, Jean-Bela Mamai's group. You know, probably they didn't make it in. So you know, and there's other groups out there that just have been dormant for a long time. You know, okay, like the Nationwide Social Democratic Party, Kasanov has been in that, you know, and I mean, that was Jamarkhan Tuyakbai's party, I think, when he was either when he was running for president against Nazarbayev or right after. You know, so at one time it kind of was, I suppose, an opposition party. But other than that, you know, there's, I think we're coming back to the youth movement now. I think as the younger people get more savvy in politics, we can expect to see more movements and you know, and political parties formed. You know, Oyan Kazakhstan was formed, but it's not political movement. Kahraman, of course, but there are rights. You know, they're concerned with human rights groups. But I mean, following on that example, I can imagine in the near future where we will see more opposition parties. Now, whether they'll still be locked out of politics, as so many opposition parties in Kazakhstan have been, you know, that remains to be seen. But I would expect it's just too soon, you know, for the I think some of the young groups to get a political party together, especially since, you know, these were kind of snap parliamentary elections. I wouldn't have thought they would have been till March anyway. But you know, so we'll see. But as far as opposition candidates, opposition parties, no. Yeah, they're still locked out.
Yeah, you remember Jean-Marie Mamai was on our show a couple of months ago, and then he spoke about the challenges that he was facing in terms of registering his parties, which means it didn't happen, so he won't be on the ballot. Okay, the ones who are on the ballot, let me bring you in, Shalkar. Yeah, we know Nur-Otan, that's a ruling party, but other than Nur-Otan, how popular are the other parties which will be competing in the elections?
We have, right now, we have three parties in Majlis of Kazakhstan.
Right.
So besides Nur-Otan, we have Akjol and KNPK, the Communist Party of Kazakhstan. And they both have seven seats in Majlis. Each one has seven seats. And of course, they will take part in this election, in the upcoming elections. Just yesterday, the political party Birlik, the Unity,
right,
rebranded itself as ADAL, as a party of honest people. And it was actually rebranded and recruited some prominent figures from the media outlets and social media. And also today there was it's announced that some prominent pundits, pro-government pundits, joined Nur Otan. For example, Aidu Sarum, who has been a long-time critic of the Nur Otan party, ruling party, and also he was a prominent member of Arjol, then Nars Arjol political party, who also Aidu Sarum was former assistant to Altun Bektir Sembayev, who was an opposition leader and killed in 2005. It's interesting, and of course, it's expected that he will play some active role in the upcoming elections, and probably we'll see Aidu Sarum on the list of Nur Otan candidates.
I'm saying that in any way, in any shape or form, are they different from Nur Otan in terms of their policy, in terms of the figures leading them? Can we differentiate them from ruling party?
They always have been dormant political parties. They have never played an active role in discussions of hot topics. They haven't organized any rallies except Nur Otan, who organized their first political rally over the last decade, last year in July. So they're actually the pro-president, pro-government political parties, which actually were created by the support of the government to portray the Kazakhstan as a democratic country which has more than one political party. But in fact, they have no voice in the public and political discourse.
Yeah, now we have seen those movies in the rest of Central Asian countries. There are so many parties just copying each other, all kind of formally and informally supported by the authorities. I guess no one is buying that. What was I asking about? Yeah, you mentioned the Adil party, right? The Adil party recruiting some social media.
It's a former Birlik, and yesterday it's Adil party.
So and you said they have recruited some social media figures. So what does it tell you? What kind of figures are they? Are they thinking of doing something different than usually the party has done in the past?
So Birlik actually was portrayed as pro-NPP Atamekin. So it's portrayed as a political party that supports Timur Kulibayev, entrepreneurs in Kazakhstan. Actually, they have several figures who joined Birlik party yesterday, and one of them is one of the associates of Timur Kulibayev. And besides him, we have two celebrities. One is Maksat Tolokbai, who is an anchor on Kazakhstan National TV. And the second one is Daulet, and his nickname is Daulet10 on Instagram. And he has around 900,000 followers on Instagram. He actually gives some consultations for his followers on how to get mortgages and how to buy apartments in Kazakhstan. So he's very popular among Instagram users.
So does it tell you that they genuinely want to compete? They want to have more seats, and there will be some sort of competition, at least within the lines and boundaries that authorities will allow them to compete?
So it's an interesting question. And personally, I don't believe that they have some political ambitions. I think that they are offered to join the Adal party to play the role of political activists during the electoral period, so from November till the end of January. And another scenario, they might get in the parliament after the election, and they might have some seats in the parliament, but it doesn't affect anything.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I ask this question often when we have a similar conversation about the other Central Asian countries too. Like today, for example, even authorities in Kazakhstan allows all the opposition parties to compete freely, objectively, with all the fairness and everything. Do they have chance beating Nur Otan in a politically free and fair elections?
Well, I have to admit that there is a very little place for trust amongst people and amongst experts and amongst media workers, journalists. You know, we didn't know, we never experienced that in our lifetime. I mean, we always had a ruling party, even though officially it wasn't a ruling, right? So what I want to say that maybe it is mostly, I guess, accepted as like acting or playing, because there was some, this election will be a bit special because there was a changing, you know, and according to the new amendments to the electoral legislation, I mean that we are expecting to see more women in the future election, up to 30%, and we are expecting to see more younger generation there. Because currently the average age of deputies is 65 years old, and I've seen an article from where Maulena Shumbayev, he's the head of Senate, he said that this election should be very special and that the average age of all deputies should be lower than 65 years old. So maybe this is another reason why they started to do this offer, you know, to more younger or maybe to more socially active people. So taking this all into account, I just see it more as a way to show that something is changing. But we don't know really.
These are very useful information. I guess my question was not clear enough. You know, what I was trying to understand is the parties which call themselves opposition, what are their chances of victory, even if they are allowed to compete freely, independently, without any barrier? I mean, are they known? Are their policies are known? Are those policies in line with what the majority like to see happening in the country? Do they even have enough appeal among ordinary people?
No, I think that it's quite obvious that no, especially when we're talking about popularity amongst people and in other stages. I mean, that even that parties that today mentioned by my colleagues, you know, they become active just before the election. So I mean that people don't know them, they don't know their programs, they even don't know how many seats they have, you know, and just generally, people are not really interested in what is going on in political stage. Even, you know, we can see even the difference between two main cities, Almaty and Nur-Sultan. And people in Nur-Sultan, I could say that more interested in it rather than just ordinary people in Almaty. So this is why I don't believe that they really have this chance.
Okay. I think we need to wrap up the discussion very soon. But maybe just the final points. Bruce, let me bring you in here. As Aygül was talking about, you know, you have these huge political party with lots of resources. I'm talking about the ruling party. And the others are weak, disadvantaged, and not with many resources, not well-known figures. But then what is this all restrictions about that the authorities are imposing on them in terms of being able to organize rallies and do the campaigning and all these things? What the authorities are afraid of, Bruce?
Well, you know, I'm sure that all the parties that are registered to compete will be able to. In fact, it's guaranteed that they get airtime and chances to meet with the public and stuff. The opposition, I don't know, to tell you the truth, because I couldn't. It would be tough to say. The obvious answer here is that the Kazakh authorities are afraid that popular sentiment, if you find a charismatic leader or party or something, popular sentiment will start to grow against them, and in the end, they could lose their positions. You know, I'm old enough to remember and was in Kazakhstan since the early 90s. You know, and they did have opposition groups for a long time. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't until like 15 years ago when they had elections that they pretty much phased out all the opposition parties, and people used to get seats, but they didn't get a lot. And there was actually a lot of different representation in Kazakhstan's parliament. So they never could be the majority. They were never true opposition could never be the majority, but they at least could voice some complaints about their people. But they weren't in a position to actually change policy by themselves. But it looked better. You know, and you would have thought the government would have learned the lesson from that, that it wasn't so bad, that 15 or 20% of the seats, maybe, you know, actually were going to opposition deputies because they couldn't challenge them, really. But, you know, and in those days, of course, in the 90s, there was all kinds of problems in Kazakhstan. The economy was nowhere near looking like what it is today. And that said, even with the coronavirus and the drop in the price of oil in the 90s, it was bad. You know, and it's still, you know, they let the opposition groups go. Then the standard of living's come way up in Kazakhstan. I don't see why they couldn't have one or two. You know, or it was suggested that they should switch and have 50-50 on the parliamentary elections, where 50% of the seats were done by party legal mandate districts, and that would allow for independence, which would also work. At least independence would get 7 or 8 seats, maybe, and at least they could be the voice of the people, you know, and say the people in my neighborhood want this change or this. maybe it wouldn't change, but at least you could bring it up. With the parliament they got now and have had for years, you can't even, no one is going to say stuff like that. Until the people at the top say it's okay to bring up this issue, they can't bring it up. And that's always going to be the problem.
Right. Okay, let's end the conversation with final remarks from Mukhtar. Mukhtar, so 2 months to go until the election day. So where your eyes will be, what you will be watching?
Before answering, just a very important detail to what Shalkar said about this newly rebranded party, that it has official registration. It's Birlik Party. It was renamed to Adal Party. We did a report at the Radio Free of Kazakh service, and we found its address, official address, at the office of the Nur Otan Party. So they are, Nur Otan and Adal are registered at the same address. So this says everything about this.
Interesting, very interesting. Very briefly, I mean, we have 2 months until the election. During this time, where your eyes will be as a journalist, what you will be watching in Kazakhstan?
I think we'll be watching just ordinary elections, quiet elections, where people won't have choice. Most of the people won't have choice to have their own votes counted.
Okay. I think with this, we unfortunately have to conclude the conversation. I think we will come back to this topic before the elections or the after the elections. So with this, thank you very much, Mukhtar Sengirbay, the editor of Radio Free Republic of Liberty's Kazakh service, Radio Azatik. Also, big thanks goes to Shalkar Nursaidov, Almaty-based political analyst, Aygul Jamal, an independent journalist based in Nur Sultan, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Republic of Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you very much, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Republic of Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C.